Hello there, everybody. Welcome into a Tape Tuesday Election Day edition of Locked On Patriots. Mark Schofield slotted into the big chair for Tuesday, November 6th, 2018. We're going to do some Tape Tuesday stuff. I want to thank everybody who voted. I decided this week, look, I'm going to leave it up to the people. I've always said that this is your show. I'm just kind of keeping the big chair warm and that it was the listener's show. I'm here to provide for you. And so I opened it up poll style on Twitter, let people vote on what they wanted, gave them a couple of options for the Tape Tuesday segments. So what we're going to talk about today, thanks to your votes, we're going to talk Josh Gordon at the outset and then Trey Flowers. A little bit later, we're going to talk a little Obi-Mo Fonwu, one of the additions the Patriots made on Monday, adding a couple of players to the roster. Before we dive into all of that, reminder to follow me on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Check out the work at InsideThePylon.com, Pro Football Weekly, The Score, Matt Waldman's Rookie Scouting Portfolio, Big Blue View, part of the SB Nation family of websites. If they're covering football, chances are I'm doing some work for them. Let's dive into it right now. Excited to start off with Josh Gordon, who, as we talked about in the Glorious Victory Edition, a installment of the Locked On Patriots podcast, had a huge game. But what I love about the access to, you know, the All-22, the coaches table, however you want to describe it, is the ability in the pass game, as well as the run game with the end zone angle, to see what the receivers are doing away from the football. Are they getting open when the ball is not coming to them? How are their releases off the line of scrimmage? These are sometimes the things that you don't see. How are they when they're asked to sort of throttle down in zone coverage and the ball doesn't go their way? Are they making the right decisions in those moments? So I was really excited to sort of sit down and study Josh Gordon. I got to say, even though he had a huge game, even though the numbers kind of speak for themselves, even though he had a back-breaking type of touchdown to ice that game, I thought he looked even better when I got a chance to rewatch him. So let's go through a couple of plays here just to kind of talk you through what I'm seeing when I'm looking at Josh Gordon. The first play I want to start with is a play in the opening drive, first and 10 situation. The Patriots had just gotten a first down. Remember, this was their drive when they went plaid, sort of Spaceball style. And they get Brady under center, and they want to go play action and design a deep shot here. You could tell in the scripted 10 or 15 or so, they wanted to, when they got a first down, go play action and take a deep shot, and they nearly hit it. Gordon is in a tight split to the left. Packers are in single high coverage here. Corner walks down right across from him, and he looks to jam him. But Gordon just wins right off of the line of scrimmage. He takes one quick hard step. This is kind of his move. He'll hard step to the outside towards the sideline with his left foot and then cut back inside. The defender across from him takes his, mirrors that step, and then when he goes to jam him, Gordon is so quick to get inside of that corner, does such a fantastic job, and then he gets vertical, and he's got 2 yards of separation. Now, the problem is it's a cover one man-free look. What the Patriots are hoping for is that the safety cheats down hard on the run fake, and he does get down a couple of steps, but not enough. And so the safety is able to sort of run over the top of this, and he's actually able to stack Gordon, preventing him from getting the ball. This was a well-designed, well-called play. I like the script aspect to it. Gordon runs a fantastic route. His releases off the line of scrimmage are so great. And this, you know, that's something that you often don't catch when you're watching these games live. And sometimes when, you know, you don't even see it on the replays, they don't show it. But his release here is just a thing of beauty. He has a similar win off the line of scrimmage a little bit later in the first quarter. This is a play that comes at the 5:05 mark. It's a pass to Edelman that goes for a first down, but he's running the dig again from the left side of the field. And again, he's got press coverage, defender right in his face. Off the snap, what did Gordon do to get that win off the line of scrimmage? It's the same thing. It's that quick jab step to the outside, but then he gets inside. And you would think that after seeing this, defenders would be ready for it, but you can't easily match his quickness. And so he's open on his dig route. He gets the guy on his back hip, gets him on his back pocket. He's open on the dig route, but Edelman is just much more open. He's running an out route versus sort of off coverage, and he does a very good job running his route, getting that defender's flipped. But Gordon, again, Fantastic route. Another great route from him, and this was more that a route that he sort of wins throughout the route, not just at the line of scrimmage. If you remember, there was a play at the end of the first quarter, it's 14 seconds left, where he runs sort of that deep out route. I've seen people call it sort of the Julio route, where you release vertically, you look like you're going to the post, and then you break to the outside. He's running that. He starts in a slot to the left, and then they motion him outside a little bit. That gets him kind of a free release because the corner drops off. So he pushes vertically, breaks to the post, and then really gets that defender to flip his hips. Gets great separation working back to the outside. But the pass just sort of goes out of bounds. But that was another fantastic route from Josh Gordon. The nine ball that they opened the second quarter with, this was that deep vertical route where Brady hit him on the left sideline. Again, we see Gordon winning at the line of scrimmage. It's another situation where he's got a press corner in his face off the snap. This time, though, what I love about it, he changes it up. His first move is actually to the inside. He steps inside with that right foot. So now this is a new look for the defender. He overcommits to the inside. Gordon gets a vertical release and gets outside leverage along the boundary. And then, as I talked about in the Glorious Edition show, does a great job of sort of using his body to stack the defender there. So that was a fantastic, fantastic route. The play that I really sort of want to focus on here, because I don't want to go too long here in this segment, is a play where the ball didn't even go to him. We talked a little bit about his ability on slant routes and stuff like that, but there was a play late in the third quarter, at the 2:49 mark of the third quarter. And this was one of those bad overthrows. It was during that sort of poor stretch from Brady. And it looks like Brady's trying to throw this ball to Hogan. The Patriots come out. Brady's in the shotgun. It's a 3rd-and-3 at the 2:49 mark of the third quarter. They've got a three-receiver bunch to the left. Gordon is alone on the right. And it looks like pre-snap, they're in a cover three fire zone type look. So they've got seven defenders down in the box, all of them on the line of scrimmage showing blitz, and they've got three guys sort of looking in off-coverage type situations. But they rotate it to a Tampa 2 look. So they show blitz, they drop eight. But what Gordon does on this play is so brilliant. And for some, myself included, who might have wondered, look, is this guy going to pick up the offense? Is he going to make the reads, the adjustments, and things like that? What he does here is beautiful because, as I said, they rotate this into a Tampa 2 look with a hard corner over him. And remember, as I was describing it, they had a safety in the middle of the field showing them cover three. He's now going to rotate to the deep outside where Gordon is. So the corner squats. The safety is deep over the top. What does Gordon do? He just stops and throttles down right in the turkey hole. And at the moment that Brady releases his throw to Hogan coming across the field, Gordon is wide open. He doesn't have a defender within 8 yards of him. He's well past the first down marker. It could have been a huge play. Instead, Brady floats one sort of in the general direction of Hogan, although they actually, on the NFL Game Pass, they said he threw it to Gordon, but it looks like he's really trying to hit Hogan here. But just a fantastic, fantastic read by Gordon to sort of throttle down here, get himself that space in the turkey hole, make himself available for his quarterback. Brady just doesn't see it. You know, I think if Brady sees that, he pulls the trigger there and hits Gordon for a huge gain. But those are some of the plays that I really was impressed with from Josh Gordon. I thought he had a fantastic day, even on the plays where he wasn't a target, even the plays where he wasn't throwing the ball. I thought he was very impressive. His releases off the line of scrimmage, working inside, working outside, fantastic. And what's impressive from him is we talked a little bit with Jeff Risden and others about how he's added some upper body strength. That's making him tough to jam. Even when some of these defenders get that jam on him, whether it's one hand or two hands, he's got the upper body strength to just work through those and get himself into his route, get up speed, and get some separation. So a fantastic game from him production-wise, but looking at the coach's tape, even better. Up next, we're going to do the same. You know, we've had an ode to Josh Gordon. Now it's going to be an ode to Trey Flowers. Again, thanks to your voted online, which I do appreciate. And speaking of online, whether you're in the Locked On Patriots Slack channel or Twitter at Mark Schofield, please send in some questions. We're going to be doing the Take Thursday show on Wednesday, and we'll have the crossover on Thursday. But like, as I said, up ahead, Trey Flowers. But first, look, we all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band i.e. Toto, i.e. me, Thursday night. Can't wait. Or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats, you can attend the concert, the show, or the sporting event of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choosing. To make things even better for you, Vivid Seats has given listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to get $20 off orders of $200 or more so they can save even more money. You know, to get yourself a t-shirt or something after the show. So go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code Locked On for $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. So download the app, use that promo code Locked On, get yourself that $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. Again, that'll save you some money. Get yourself a t-shirt or two. So make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Mark Schofield back with you now on this Tape Tuesday installment of Locked On Patriots. And yes, it's election day. I'm going to keep bugging you, especially at the end, giving a special shout out to our listeners down in Florida. Look, it's game day for the U.S. political system. So get out there, make your voice heard. But before that, it's time for the man of the man the people chose to break down on the defensive side of the ball. That is Trey Flowers. And honestly, you know, when I was doing my prep work for the show, that's right, friends. While I do this all one take, boom, done, I do a lot of prep work, get myself ready. I was doing some research, and I found this tweet from Jeff Howe, at Jeff P. Howe on Twitter, of The Athletic. Trey Flowers had 8.5 disruptions, a half a sack, one quarterback hit, and 7 pressures versus the Packers. The most I've tracked since compiling these stats in 2015. Flowers' prior high was 6.5, a half sack, 3 quarterback hits, 3 pressures versus Pittsburgh last season. Hightower had the previous record for the team with 7. 3 quarterback hits, 4 pressures versus the Jets week 7, 2015. I could pretty much just say that is it in a nutshell. He had a fantastic game. And he did. But what was really interesting to me, and remember, you know, the Packers lost their starting right tackle, so you saw a lot of Flowers working off the edge there. And yes, that played a role. But I was even more fascinated at the number of times that he kicked down inside and worked against guards. And I'm going to talk about a couple of those plays here as we sort of go through the night that Trey Flowers have. There's a play from the first quarter, 9:36 mark of the first quarter. Packers face a first and 10 at their own 49-yard line. And this pass will end up falling complete. But again, what we see is a defensive front of Dietrich Wise at one defensive end. So he's at left defensive end across from the right tackle. And then you've got Flowers aligned in the B gap between the right guard and the right tackle. You've got Malcolm Brown shaded to the left shoulder of the center. And then you've got Keyonta Davis. So that's your four man. This might be your sort of, I don't want to say speed rushing package maybe, but you've got three edge type guys and then Malcolm Brown. And you get Trey Flowers kicked inside against the right guard. And he just beats the right guard on this play. He gets it begins with hand placement and hand usage. Because Flowers makes the first contact. He gets his hands into the shoulder pads of the right guard first. And then he's able to sort of pull him around. And when the right guard tries to sort of ride him to the ground as Flowers dips under him, what's amazing from Flowers is he has that sort of bend and that flexion that we see from great edge defenders where he can still maintain his balance and work through that. And so when the right guard is trying to push him to the ground, he's able to maintain his leverage, stay upright, bend around him, and pressure Rodgers. Rodgers is forced to sort of climb. Then Dietrich Wise comes late to get some pressure on him. But it starts with Trey Flowers being kicked inside. You see this a little bit later in the first quarter. This comes at the 7:46 mark on the same drive. This play is a short pass to Jimmy Graham that goes for 12 yards. But again, Flowers is kicked inside. He beats both the guard and the running back in pass protection. He beats the guard with an inside move. Then he beats Aaron Jones, works around, forces Rodgers off the spot. Rodgers makes a great play, but just a tremendous job from him, from Trey Flowers, sort of beating two blockers in that situation. Goal line play at 5:56. This is a first and nine play, first and goal from the nine, 5:56 of the first quarter. What I thought was really interesting about this play, now he's aligned more in his typical spot at the defensive end spot. They must have been worried about Aaron Jones as a receiver because Flowers doesn't rush the passer at all. What he does on this play, Aaron Jones is aligned to the right of Aaron Rodgers in the backfield. Rodgers is in the shotgun, and he's going to run a swing route. Flowers starts upfield, looking like he's going to be rushing the passer, but really all he does is try to chip or jam Aaron Jones and not really let him get a free release out of the backfield. That's all he does on the play. He doesn't come after Rodgers at all. I thought that was fascinating. And I got to say, in all my years of sort of watching football, I've seen, you know, chips on guys, jams on guys. You don't want to give a guy a free release. I've never seen something like that. And now the Patriots have done things like that this year. Remember the play against Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes where they walked out Dante Hightower. They did it with Adrian Claiborne at one point last night, Sunday night too, where they walk him well outside and you're chipping a tight end. But I've never seen that done to a back out of the backfield like that. And maybe it's happened and I just never noticed it, but I thought that was really interesting. A little bit later in the first quarter, we get that play that Chris Collinsworth is going nutty about. This is a second and five for the Packers on their own 33. And this is when Flowers aligns as a defensive end, steamrolls both the right tackle, driving him basically into the running back, gets off of them, gets into the grill of Aaron Rodgers and forces him to throw it away. You know, just a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic play. Just an individual effort type play where he runs over two potential blockers on that moment and still gets pressure on Rodgers and forces him to sort of, turf it so he can live to fight another day. Let's go to the third quarter now. This is a play that was a big, big play at that moment because it's a third and seven situation at the 5:31 mark of the third quarter. And this comes after the Patriots had missed on that fourth and goal on that throw to Josh Gordon. But you've got them pinned. You need to keep them pinned. So it's a third and seven, and it's another situation where the Patriots do something really interesting on defense. They come out with a 2-3-6 package. So they've got Trey Flowers in one A-gap between the center and the right guard, and they've got Malcolm Brown in the other A-gap. Then they've got John Simon sort of at one sort of edge defender spot, Dante Hightower at the other, and Kyle Van Noy sort of lurking around behind Malcolm Brown. So those are your front five. Basically, they got, you know, two guys on the inside, you know, one of them being a defensive end. So you could really sort of call this, you know, if you want to say Flowers is more of like an outside linebacker, you could say it's more of a 1-4-6, but we'll call it a 2-3-6 type package. And then you've got those three linebackers, and then you've got the six defensive backs. So you've got Gilmore, you've got Jason McCourty, you've got Chun down in the box, you've got the two other safeties and Devin McCourty and Daron Harmon, and then you've got J.C. Jackson on the outside as well. And aligned on the inside, working against the right guard, you want to get off the field. What does Trey Flowers do? He takes the right guard and basically walks him right back into the lap of Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers can't step into this throw, which is covered well. It's a deep shot to Randall Cobb that is covered perfectly by Jason McCourty. But he can't step into the throw because Flowers has just walked that right guard back into the quarterback's kitchen. So tremendous play there. And then finally the sack. That he and Claiborne combined on. That's that third down at the 9:21 mark of the fourth quarter. You know, the Patriots have just taken a touchdown, so they've got the lead now. You really want to get off the field if you're the defense. You've taken that 24-17 lead. You don't want to give them a chance to come back into the game. It's a third and seven play. What happens? You get three. Let me look at it again. Yeah, it's a four-man front, basically, where you've got Claiborne on the outside, a right defensive end, and then you've got Adam Butler on one defensive tackle, and then Dante Hightower on the edge outside of him. But the guy inside of Claiborne is Trey Flowers. Now he's aligned on the right side of the defense between the left guard and the left tackle. And what do we get? We get that tackle-edge exchange stunt, which I've talked about a ton. Flowers starts upfield. Claiborne loops behind him. Flowers... His job is to occupy the guard and the tackle so Claiborne can loop around. But he doesn't occupy him. I guess you could say he doesn't do his job. Because instead of occupying those two, he splits right between them. He beats both of them between that B gap. and he gets to Rodgers just about the same time as Claiborne does, looping around. And so it's a perfectly executed tackle and exchange stunt, except for the fact that technically Flowers didn't do his job because he's supposed to occupy those guys, not beat a double team, which is what in effect he does. And so those were some of the plays from him that I wanted to highlight. Just a fantastic night from him. He's becoming the edge defender that the Patriots have sort of needed, but I was also impressed with how they moved him around a ton. So fantastic game from him. Fantastic game from Josh Gordon. Fantastic game from the New England Patriots. But up next, we're going to talk about the newest Patriot, Obi Melanfonu, as well as, again, my final last-minute plea, please go out there and vote, especially to our friends down in Florida. That's ahead on this Tape Tuesday edition of Locked On Patriots. Mark Schofield back with you now on this Tape Tuesday installment of Locked On Patriots. And we've gone through some offensive stuff. We've gone through some defensive stuff. So it's time to shift gears to the other sort of news of the day. The Patriots making a player acquisition, agreeing in terms with former Raiders safety Obi Melanfonu. And this is something of an interesting acquisition by the New England Patriots. If you remember Melanfonu, who was originally from London, then played his college football at the University of Connecticut after moving to Massachusetts, kind of blew the doors off the combine, really sort of grabbed a lot of attention there. Very athletic player. He was a track athlete as well in high school, played running back and defensive back at Grafton High School in South Grafton, Massachusetts. His broad jump was the second all-time at the combine behind Byron Jones, who he played with in the defensive backfield at the University of Connecticut. He was drafted by the Raiders, and that just did not pan out. We'll get to that in a minute. But it's important, I think, to go back and look ever so quickly at where he was when he was coming out. And the best way to do that, at least from my perspective, is to look at the 2017 Inside the Pylon draft guy. Our lead scout on him was Luke Polglaze, who's currently a coach for Catholic University here in the D.C. area, coaching football, you know. And he, when he wrote him up, there was something that obviously jumped off the screen. The size and the athleticism. 6'4", 225. He's got a wingspan of 32.5-inch arms, 9 1/8-inch hands. He ran a 4.4 at the combine, 17 reps on the bench, 44 inches on the vertical, 11 feet, 9 inches on the broad jump. He was our third-ranked safety behind Malik Hooker and Jamal Adams, two pretty good players in their own right. And when he studied him, Luke's strengths on him, takes good angles to the ball carrier, processes information well in the open field, reads the flow of play and picks through trash like a linebacker, is comfortable coming up from a too high position to make tackles in the short area of the field, drives through ball carrier when tackling, loose hips, able to play through receiver to the ball with cornerback-like positional athleticism, tracks the well ball in the air, adjusts the ball flight, breaks quickly on the football, aggressive at the catch point, top-notch closing speed, disregards blockers coming downhill against perimeter runs, experiences a two-high safety, a single-high safety, a strong safety, a box linebacker, an edge defender, a slot corner, brings a wealth of experience and versatility. And with respect to his scheme fit, Luke had this on Obi Melanfonu. Melanfonu could play many roles in NFL defenses. A two-high cover two team will value his downhill ability and athleticism. He could easily fit as a strong safety or a nickel linebacker for the way he picks through messes down in the box. A team willing to experiment and deal with an adjustment period may be willing to try him at boundary corner in a cover three defense where he can use his top-end speed, frame, and tackling ability on the perimeter. Or he could become the tight end killer that so many teams covet, a defender capable of matching up physically and athletically with tight ends and man coverage. Now for a projection on him, Luke wrote this: simply due to his freakish combine performance, Melanfonu may have one of the highest ceilings in the class, and that is no small part because of his versatility on the field. Athletically, he stacks up pound for pound with just about any NFL player. Defensive coaches at the next level should be salivating at the thought of getting Melanfonu just based on his fit in practically any system, despite the fact they will need to get his attention redirected at times. He does have the occasional lack of effort, but it recurs consistently when he's playing single high. He already has the frame and traits to play a linebacker position, and an enterprise and defensive coordinator may well try him there in a big nickel situation. Either way, with him in the box or outside of it, he's a grade A athlete with on-field production and skills to boot. So that's how ITP viewed him coming out, and we weren't alone in being high in Melanfonu. The problem is, and Luke highlighted it here, a team willing to experiment and deal with an adjustment period may be willing to try him at a boundary corner in a cover three defense. That's kind of how they used him. Think back to New England's game last year down in Mexico City against the Raiders. You saw that double move from Brandon Cooks against Obi Melifonwu trying to play that cover three corner role, and he just bit on the quick double move from Brandon Cooks, got beaten deep for a touchdown. That was the problem with him. The Raiders didn't make the best usage of him. They tried to put him in that corner position. It didn't work, even though Luke had highlighted, look, you're going to need an adjustment period. They didn't give him that adjustment period. But think of all the other things that he does well. He could easily fit as a strong safety or nickel linebacker for the way he picks through messes in the box. He could become the tight end killer that so many teams covet, a defender capable of matching up physically and athletically with tight ends and man coverage. Who does that sound to you? Who does that sound like to you? That sounds like Patrick Chung. And now you look at him, you know, having that 6'4 height to him, that 32.5-inch arms to him, so you get height, length, athleticism. This might be a move to give you the Patrick Chung replacement, whether it's down the road or sooner than you think. And they're signing him off the street. And so I think this is a brilliant move by the New England Patriots. I'm a big fan of this move. I was a fan of Melifonwu coming out. I think this is a fantastic move by the organization to get him in. Again, you're signing him off the street. And they might even, Dave Archibald pointed this out, the Patriots have a practice squad spot open with Brendan Ferentz up. They might put him on the practice squad and basically stash him. Say, look, start learning the system. You may be our Patrick Chung next year or the year after. But, you know, he's a guy that was 23 when he was drafted. So there's still, you know, there's still a lot of time in development and growth that he can go through. But a premier athlete and a guy that sounds like the player that Bill Belichick would want in his system. So I'm fully on board with this signing. And as with any sort of Patriots move, you see a move like that and everybody's like, oh, well, of course, here we go. You know, the rich get richer. That's what the Patriots do, though. You know, think about the juxtaposition that I just basically laid out for you. The Raiders put him in a spot he probably wasn't best suited for. What the Patriots do, though, is they don't care what you can't do. They identify what you can do. They identify the traits and the skills that you show, and they try to make that work in your system, put you in a position to succeed. That's the hallmark of good coaching. That will do it for today's show. I will be back tomorrow. We're doing Take Thursday on a Wednesday this week. We're pushing the crossover to Thursday. The guys over at Locked On Titans, they got a Monday night game, so they're going to be, you know, doing some post-game stuff and all kinds of stuff like that. So we're going to push it off to Wednesday. But again, this is Tuesday. And for Americans out here, this is game day. It's election day here in the United States. And I've been bugging you. You know, for the past week or so, you got to vote. You got to get out there and vote. Not telling you who to vote for, not telling you what to vote for. I'm just saying you got to get out there and do it. I've been giving some sort of state-specific shout-outs. We're going to close it out with another state that listens to this show in big numbers, and that's Florida, which anybody that's followed American politics, followed American elections, you know, a lot of it comes down to Florida. Got a huge governor's race down there. Got a huge Senate race down there. And there are a number of statewide ballot measures as well, certified for the ballot on today, election day. You've got, by my count, 13 or 12. I'm looking at Ballotpedia right now. I can't tell if there's 12 or 13. I know that sounds weird, but they say 12, 13 are listed. Either way, there's a number of them, including one that will restore the right to vote for most people with prior felony convictions upon completion of their sentences. That's the one that's gotten a lot of attention as well. Maybe that's something you feel strongly about one way or the other. That's another reason to get out there and vote, you know, cast your ballot. There's also stuff on casino gambling. There's stuff on offshore oil and gas drilling, vaping in closed workspaces. That's in the same amendment. That's weird to me, but hey, you can vote on it. There's another amendment that prohibits public officials from lobbying for compensation while in office and 6 years thereafter. Maybe that's a swamp type thing that you don't like. You don't want people to be able to sort of lobby, you know, while in office, let alone for 6 years after. Maybe you want to go vote on that. Maybe you think people should be allowed to do that. Then go vote on it. All I'm saying is, look, get out there and vote. And if you need any more little incentive to get out there and do this, look, there are states where you can get paid time off to vote. So if you are if you're working today and you don't know if you can get time off from work to do it, there are a number of states where you can. For example, Minnesota, you can get the entire day off paid. There's no limit to how much time that you can take to go vote. Texas, same thing. You can get paid time off, no limit on how much time you take to go vote. Other states, such as California, you get 2 hours. Colorado, you get 2 hours. Again, this is paid. Kansas, 2 hours. Missouri, 3 hours. Tennessee, 3 hours. New York State, 2 hours. Other states, it's not paid, but you still can get time to do it, such as Wisconsin with 3 hours. Georgia, there's big elections down there, 2 hours. Massachusetts, you get 2 hours in the state of Massachusetts to make your votes. So please, please, please get out there and do that. Get out there and vote. Make your voice heard. Apologies for my phone going off. It might be the vet. Call me about Presley again. Keep him in your thoughts. Haven't gotten the best of the news yet, but we're still waiting on some other stuff. But please get out there and vote. Make your voices heard. I will be back tomorrow on a Take Wednesday, so get some questions in at Mark Schofield on Twitter. Until next time, keep it locked right here to me, Mark Schofield, and Locked on Patriots.